Chapter 9. Shatitude. Playing the bad kid is hard work when it doesn't come naturally. But I was a quick study, and I was motivated. Tyson helped some. He was never really a bad kid himself. He was just kinda creepy. But he did understand what it took far better than I did. He treated it like a joke as he taught me the ins and outs of being unwholesome. "This is the way you slouch in your chair," he said, as we sat at the kitchen table. "You lean way far back from your desk." I tried it. "No," he said. "You're still too close. Your hands can still reach your schoolwork. You gotta slouch far enough away, maybe even tip your chair back a little bit, so that there's no way you can get to anything on your desk without major effort." "Oh, I get it. It's kinda like your textbooks are repelling you." "Exactly." He walked across the room and watched me again. "Okay, the slouch is good. Now pretend I'm the teacher. What are you going to do?" "I'm gonna stare at you," I said. "Like I can see right through you." Tyson shook his head. "Wrong answer." "Nah, that might have worked for Green, because he was trying to see through you first. With a teacher, you want to look away." So I tried looking away. "No, not out the window. Then it seems like you're just daydreaming." "You can't look down either. You have to pick a blank spot on the wall and look at it, so that it's very clear you're not looking at anything. Everyone has to know that you're doing it on purpose." I took a deep breath and sighed. "Is all this really necessary?" "Hey, you're the one who wants to look bad." I went out before dark and bought some new clothes. Bad clothes. Shirts and pants that had the ragged and rude look of defiance. When I got home, I modeled them for Tyson. That's when he started to get worried. "What's the matter?" I asked. "Did I get the wrong clothes?" "No," Tyson answered. "It's just that... I don't know. You don't look like yourself, Jared." I turned to look at the mirror on Tyson's closet door. He was right. I looked like my own evil twin. "Well, this is how I look now." He shifted his shoulders uncomfortably. "Why do you want to do this?" he asked. But I didn't tell him. I had my reasons, but right now, I couldn't share them with anyone. When I left Tyson's room, I ran into my mom in the hallway. Mom, always at the point, said, "I don't like when you dress that way, Jared." I wasn't surprised that she didn't like it. What surprised me was the way she said it. Like I had dressed this way before. "It's what everyone's wearing." "You're not everyone," she said, then added, "You want to dress like that? You wash your clothes yourself. I won't do it." I wore the clothes to school the next day, and the effect was instantaneous. I got double takes from everyone in the hallways, kids and teachers alike. I raised my eyebrows in every class as I slouched and looked off towards nothing, wearing my attitude like a heavy cologne that filled the air around me. Shatitude, I called it. The attitude everyone thought the leader of the Shadow Club would be. It really infuriated Green, and as much as that scared me, there was some satisfaction in it as well. Suddenly, he was the paranoid one, instead of me. During passing that first day, Jody Lattimore tried to give me some notes that I had missed while receiving Green's third degree. Green seemed to appear out of nowhere, staring at Jody like we were doing something illegal. "What's this all about?" he snapped. We both looked at him as if he was from Mars. "Tell me about that hat, Miss Latimer." Jody was wearing her denim baseball cap. This time, it was forward instead of backwards. On the front, in bright orange letters, were the letters T.S.C. "What's to tell?" she said calmly. "My father belongs to the tennis and squash center. We have a bunch of them." It took me a second to realize what Green was thinking. That T.S.C. could also stand for the Shadow Club. "Are you going to expel her because of the hat?" I asked. He threw me a gaze meant to chill me. I knew he had scheduled me a parent conference for the end of the week. He was making all these noises about suspension and expulsion, and yeah, it bothered me. An expulsion followed you wherever you went. But Green's x-ray gaze didn't intimidate me anymore, because I knew it wasn't going to see through anything. There must be some fourth law of thermodynamics. Along with the law of conservation of energy, there must be some kind of conservation of oddity, keeping the world in balance. It only figured that as I began to resemble a mother's worst nightmare, someone else's act began to clean up. I came home from school during that first week of the Shatitude to find some strange kid rummaging through my refrigerator for food. One of Tyson's friends, I figured, which was bizarre because Tyson never brought home friends. I didn't know he had any. I was going to ask if I could help him find something, then I remembered my Shatitude, and said, "You take something, you pay for it, dude." The kid turned around to reveal a familiar face in an entirely unfamiliar package. "Hi, Jared." It wasn't a friend of Tyson's at all. It was Tyson himself. His hair, which had always been long and stringy, was cut short, with a smooth line along the back of his neck. He had even shaved those goat hairs on the back of his neck that might have someday become a beard.
Nice and do,
I said, still reeling from the sight. What's the word for something that's a total logical inconsistency? An oxymoron. Yeah, that's what Tyson was. Tyson McGaw and clean cut did not go together in the same sentence without causing a major short circuit. Like the one I had now as I gaped at him. Actually, oxymoron was a better description of me at the moment. A moron whose brain wasn't getting enough oxygen. You like it? He asked, running his hand through what was left of his hair. Yeah, sure, I said, still wading through recovery. It'll blow everyone away. Well, he said, I figured if you could be your own evil twin, I could be my own unpsycho twin. He grabbed his jacket and headed for the door. You're off in a hurry, I said, and laughed. What, have you got a date or something? I meant it as a joke, but Tyson wasn't laughing. As a matter of fact, I do. Right about now, the signpost up ahead was beginning to read, The Twilight Zone. But I couldn't exactly say why. Yes, you can say why, my get-real voice told me. It's because Tyson is Tyson, and the Earth spins out of our orbit if he suddenly has a friend and short hair and a girlfriend and... Who's the lucky girl? Jody Latnimer. No way. Yeah, we're going out to Dairy Queen for some ice cream, and just to hang out, you know? That's not exactly a date, I informed him, even though I knew it technically was. He shrugged. Call it whatever you want. Then I noticed something else about him. He was wearing one of my shirts. Who gave you permission to put that on? This time, it wasn't Shatitude. It was all me. Well, you're not wearing your old stuff anymore. It doesn't fit you anyway. It just hangs on you, on account of you don't having any pecs. Tyson took it as an insult, which I suppose it was. I got pecs, he said, pushing out his chest. I've been working out. I've got pecs up the wazoo. The fact that, yes, my shirt actually did fit him wasn't really the point. I wasn't exactly sure what the point was, only that I was truly annoyed. Then something struck me, and suddenly, Tyson looked all different to me again. How long have you been wearing my shirts? He shrugged. I tried one on and his face changed again, like he was a regular chameleon. The minute he realized why I was asking. He thought for a moment, his face going granite hard, his lips piercing into a tight little hole in his face.
Well, of course, there was that time last week when I wore your shirt and popped a button on Alex Martz's driveway. Nobody knew but me and the skunk. Sometimes, not often, but sometimes, my brain turns into Play-Doh. And I find my mouth opening and closing as I try to squeeze an intelligent thought through the dough-matic press. Duh. Are you serious? You're not serious, right? Are you kidding? Was that a confession? You're kidding, right? Tyson shook his head. If you have to ask, then you don't deserve an answer. And then he left, leaving me on the doorstep to press my Play-Doh. By the next day, I had reached the inevitable conclusion that Tyson was just being Tyson, and probably had nothing to do with the button. At first, I wondered how he even knew about it, but by now everyone knew about that button. Still, some residual suspicion remained, like the smell of bug spray in the summer. One minute I was suspicious of him, and the next I felt all guilty about feeling that way. Between classes, I found Jody Latnimer at her locker. I approached her as though I was making a friendly conversation, but I had a reason for looking for her. Two reasons, actually. Hi, Jody, I said. Hi, Jared. So, I hear you and Tyson went to the Dairy Queen. Yeah, she said it as if it was nothing. And next week we're going to the movies. Good, I said. That's great, so you actually like him. Yeah, is that so hard to believe?
No, not at all. Now this was getting awkward.
It's just that Tyson's been through a lot, you know? I just don't want to see him hurt.
Sounds like you're jealous.
Well, maybe I was, and maybe I wasn't. I hadn't quite sorted that out yet, but I was pretty certain that jealousy, if there was any, was secondary to my genuine concern for Tyson. At least the concern I felt when I wasn't feeling suspicious of him. Anyway, the last thing Tyson needed was a game of hormonal tetherball with a girl who took it too lightly. Just don't toy with him, okay? What, are you his father now? He doesn't have a father, in case you didn't know.
So I've heard.
This wasn't going very well, but before we escalated into the fine, be that way mood, Jody disarmed.
Listen, Tyson can take care of himself, she said, and he does it pretty well.
Then she looked me over. Nice clothes, she said, in a way that made it completely unclear whether she liked my new clothes or whether she was being sarcastic.
Yeah, well, it's a look, I said.
Anyway, Tyson's not the reason why I wanted to talk to you. I wanted to see if I could get your hat.
My hat?
Yeah, I said offhandedly, trying to hide how much I really wanted it.
It's kind of cool.
Why don't you just go down to the tennis and squash center and get your own?
I pulled a bill out of my pocket.
I'll give you $10 for it.
Suit yourself.
She took my money, pulled the hat from her head, and handed it to me. I suppose $10 warranted no questions asked. Or maybe she just didn't care. Regardless, anyone who saw me wearing the hat, even if they knew where it was really from, would know that the TSC was meant for me. It was exactly what I needed to make my bad kid illusion complete. For lunch that day, I didn't go out to Salerno's. I stayed in the cafeteria. I positioned my TSC hat just right. Then I found a kid who wouldn't give me any trouble and just pushed my way in front of him in line. Hey, he complained. I turned to him and stared. You got a problem? He backed down and said nothing. Quite a few kids noticed my behavior, and I took note of which kids were intimidated, which kids were annoyed, and which kids suddenly seemed to gravitate toward me, impressed by my new mean image. During the next couple of days, it was those impressed kids that I made a point of nodding to giving a friendly rap on the shoulder as I passed by, like they were all my new best friends. Mitchell Bartok, a kid so tough he must have worn leather diapers as a baby, made a point of sitting at my lunch table on the third day of the Shattitude. We badmouthed teachers together and said some rude things about various girls we saw around the cafeteria. I pretended that I knew something about Harleys, and suddenly he was telling me his life story. Then, as the lunch bell rang, I turned to him and said, "Hey, Mitchell, all that stuff you did to Alec was pretty funny." But he looked at me cluelessly. "I thought you did all that stuff."
Yeah, sure, I said.
"Just kidding you." When he was gone, I opened my notebook and crossed him off my list of suspects. Each day when I got home, I went straight into the bathroom and peeled off my new self, like a full body mask. Then I stepped into a hot shower and scrubbed myself, feeling dirty, but knowing that the worst dirt wouldn't come off with soap. All those nasty things I said and did to build my new false image, all the tricks I was playing on kids like Mitch Bartok to ferret out the truth, I guess what bothered me the most was that everyone seemed to believe my bad kid act. I mean, I'm not a great actor, but in this case, it wasn't hard to become what they made me. And it scared me, because part of me liked it. Just as part of me had liked the secret power I wielded as the leader of the Shadow Club, back when we were at our worst. And so each day, I didn't stop scrubbing until I could find myself underneath, and remember that I liked my real self a whole lot more. And then there were my parents, who seemed to have invoked a 10-foot pole policy with me. Not physical distance, but emotional. I knew that Green was preparing for a big meeting with them the next week, and yet my parents said nothing to me about that, or any of the things that Green must have been telling them. That scared me more than their House Un-American Activities questioning. It's like they were so worried, they chose to stick their heads in the ground and broke off all communication with me. I mean, what if I really was up to something terrible? How could they not get after me for the way I was acting? Even if it was just an act, I could forgive my parents for prying too much, but it was much harder to forgive them for not prying at all. Jody showed up at our house that Friday, the end of my first week of Shattitude. She walked into the front door like she owned the place. Served me right for leaving it open. I was laying on my bed, trying not to think of anything in particular. I used to be very good at that, but in recent months, my thoughts were way too focused much of the time, usually on things I didn't enjoy thinking about. I was tossing that seashell of mine up into the air, trying to see how high I could get it without actually hitting the ceiling. My mom once told me it was a very zen thing to do, whatever that means. With my headphones blasting music, a freight train could have come through the house and I wouldn't have known. Naturally, when I looked up and saw Jody there at my bedroom door, I was startled, lost my concentration, and the shell came down, hitting me in the face. I took the headphones off, and the blaring music became tiny and distant. "I'm looking for Tyson," she said. "He's not here," I told her. "I'll tell him you came by." But she didn't go just yet. She glanced at the ballistic seashell that had done its damage and now lay innocently on my bed. "You're supposed to do that with a baseball, aren't you?" she asked. "You know, toss it up and down." I shrugged, looking at the shell. "Baseballs don't break. Isn't that the point?" "I don't know," I said. "Where's the challenge if nothing's at risk?" "Wow," she said. "Deep." She looked around, never stepping into my room. I felt like I was under a microscope again. "See anything interesting?" "Your room's not what I expected." I looked around. My desk was a mess of schoolwork, but otherwise the room was pretty neat. There was a poster of Carl Lewis bursting through an Olympic finish line, because I'm a runner. A poster of Ferrari Testarossa, because I liked cars. And a poster of supermodel Lorna Belonc, because, well, just because. All in all, my room was nothing out of the ordinary. "What did you expect?" I asked. "Pipe bombs and hate literature?" "Nah, you're too smart for that," she said. And then added, far too seriously, "for my taste. You'd keep that stuff much better hidden." She glanced at the shell, which had found its way back into my fidgety hands. So what do you hear when you put that thing in your ear? The sea?" "I hear the voices of all the kids I had to kill, because they saw my room." I thought she might laugh at that, but she didn't give me so much as a chuckle. "Yeah," I told her. "I do hear the sea, and it reminded me of all the bad stuff that happened in October." "If it were me," Jody said, "I'd never put it to my ear." "I like being reminded," I told her, "so I'll never do it again." I could sense that she didn't really believe me, but I didn't care who believed me anymore. "If you're dating Tyson, why are you so interested in me?" Jody shrugged. "A few months ago, you almost got him killed, yet now he talks about you like you're God at 14. So I guess I was just curious." She stepped back out of the door jamb, preparing to leave. "Tell Tyson I stopped by," she said, and pointed at my eye, which was still aching from where the shell hit. "And you better get some ice on that, unless a black eye is part of your new look." After she left, I put the shell in a drawer instead of back on the shelf. If it were me, I'd never put it to my ear. Maybe she was right. I had a world full of reminders already. There were enough people looking back at what I had done. That was one club I didn't need to be a part of anymore.